In a not-so-distant future, you might be able to grab your morning coffee without ever needing to tap for payment.
Good morning. Your usual? Oat milk flat white?
Sure. Add a muffin too.
Confirmed. Payment processed. Delivery in 90 seconds.
A world where payments happen before you even reach for your wallet, where money moves faster than thought, and trust is built into the code.
That world used to sound like science fiction, but the reality is we're well on our way there.
Digital rails are being rebuilt beneath every transaction, faster, smarter, and secure by design.
In this episode of FinTech Files from BCG Platinian, we're diving deep into the evolution of digital payment rails, how cybersecurity, blockchain, and new forms of currency are reshaping the way money moves.
And at the center of that transformation is Fireblocks, a company building the secure infrastructure powering the next generation of payments.
For decades, global payments have run on familiar rails. Networks like SWIFT, card processors, and clearinghouses that connect every bank, business, and central authority.
Money has always moved through them, slowly, but verified, reconciled, and settled through layers of intermediaries. That is, until a new system appeared.
Bitcoin breaks $1,000 for the first time.
Critics call it a bubble waiting to burst.
Governments scramble to respond to the rise of cryptocurrency.
Could blockchain be the future of finance?
Bitcoin and the digital currencies that followed promised instant, borderless money, a revolutionary concept. In 2016, reports began to surface of coordinated cyber attacks on financial institutions across Asia that were later linked to a North Korean group.
Cut off from the global banking system, the regime turned to cyber operations to fund itself, breaching the SWIFT network, siphoning millions from Bangladesh Central Bank. Soon, the same tactics appeared in digital asset exchanges, with South Korean platforms losing hundreds of millions.
For cybersecurity experts, those incidents became case studies in how vulnerabilities could ripple through the global financial system. Among them was Michael Shaulo, a cybersecurity expert who would later go on to found Fireblocks.
I was working at that point in time at a company called Checkpoint, and somehow we got ourselves involved in investigating part of that breach. And I think we kind of realized two things. I wasn't crypto at that point in time.
First, Michael and his team realized that attacks on digital assets were becoming increasingly organized.
It might have changed my life, but basically.
And second, that there was no equivalent of enterprise-grade security for the emerging blockchain economy.
At the time, few believed that digital assets would ever matter to institutions.
But the team that would become Fireblocks saw the beginnings of a new financial rail, one that needed to be secured before it could be trusted.
So initially, I thought that someone else is going to do something about this. So I was occasionally advising some cybersecurity VC. I go into this meeting with them after I've seen this hack, and I'm telling them, hey, we should invest in a company that will do cybersecurity for crypto. There was like this whole argument that evolved that basically the partners thought that it's a complete scam.
The idea was far from mainstream.
So they began speaking directly with exchanges, hedge funds, and market makers to understand how digital assets were really being managed.
And what they discovered was a fundamental gap.
Transactions worth millions, removing without the controls expected in traditional finance. No secure custody, no counterpart verification, and no clear accountability.
Around that time, new hardware technology was emerging from Intel, Samsung, and Apple. Trusted execution environments, or security built directly into chips.
Back in 2018, we were within a fairly limited set of people that were familiar with this technology that was called trusted execution, right? But basically Samsung and Apple were the first ones that were playing around with how to do security that is built into the chip. Intel actually came out with the first version of it for servers called SGX. And what I sort of started to understand with my co-founders was that you can actually apply that technology to the problem at hand and create, at least what we thought at that point in time, a cybersecurity company for digital assets. Once we actually develop that and start going to market, we discover that, okay, we are a fintech infrastructure as a service that just happens to be secure by design with a secure infrastructure.
That approach, security by design, became the basis for Fireblocks.
What began as an idea to secure crypto transactions evolved into a broader platform for moving digital value safely between institutions.
By 2020, the groundwork for institutional-grade digital asset infrastructure was in place, just as the world's reliance on digital payments was about to accelerate.
Breaking tonight, governments are ordering citizens to stay at home.
Non-essential businesses closing their doors indefinitely.
Delivery apps overwhelmed as online orders surge.
Grocery chains roll out contact-free pickup and payment.
Banks move to remote service. Digital channels under strain.
When the pandemic arrived in 2020, the shift to digital payments intensified overnight.
Contactless and online transactions became routine, while institutions began exploring how digital assets could serve their clients.
As institutions rushed to digitize, a new layer of infrastructure began to emerge. Systems built to move money faster and more securely.
Payment platforms helped expand and accelerate global payment rails.
Digital asset providers like Fireblocks built the secure infrastructure, enabling financial institutions to handle stablecoins and tokenize value.
Compliance and data firms added the trust layer, powering real-time monitoring, verification, and connectivity across financial systems.
Together, these systems form much of the unseen backbone of today's digital payments.
Fireblocks, at the base of the base of the that infrastructure, there are actually two components, right? The first one is the wallet infrastructure, which is essentially key management and connectivity to nodes, right? So that is the component that is responsible for securing the assets, securing the actual cryptocurrency or stablecoin or RWA when it's in your wallet in a stationary state, right? And it's also responsible for instructing the movement of the asset. And the second component is the Fireblocks network, which is responsible for authenticating the counterparties that you're sending money to and basically making sure that you're able to send instructions of what to do with the digital asset, basically financial instructions of why you are sending those assets. The thing that you really need to do is to make sure that you are putting as much security as possible before you send the transaction. You need to have a completely different capabilities in order to authenticate who your counterparty is and eventually kind of send those instructions. And on top of it, you also need to have, which I think came in the last couple of years, capabilities to send as part of those authenticated instructions compliance information, right, that is required for regulators. But it has to basically be instantaneous, bulletproof, and completely different, basically being done pre-transaction instead of post-transaction and relying on the fact that you'll be able to roll back those transactions because you can't. So that's what I think is fundamentally different about Fireblocks and why I think we've been successful is because with the concept of the Fireblocks network and the custody infrastructure and the wallets and the combination between the two, we were able to create a very secure but very scalable and fast operating system for all those financial institutions that adopting digital assets such that they can both be online, be transactional, but make sure that they have all the controls in place to guarantee that those transactions are actually going through to the right recipients with the right controls, with the right compliance, without slowing them down.
Institutional adoption grew quickly as companies sought speed and certainty. By 2022, digital assets were no longer limited to trading desks or custody platforms.
A new form of digital money, stablecoins, currencies designed to maintain a one-to-one value with the dollar or other fiat, had begun to find practical use in business transactions.
For years, these on-chain dollars were viewed as a niche tool for crypto markets. But as institutions searched for faster, lower-cost ways to move funds, their potential became harder to ignore.
For many in the industry, the shift from theory to real-world application was sudden and unmistakable. Michael remembers one moment clearly.
Basically, we sign up, let's say our 10th customer or something like that.
Hello, how may I help you?
Yeah, I'd like to pay my invoice. Can I pay by credit card?
Hold on one moment. Let me ask my boss.
Yeah, we are in this like WeWork. She sits behind me. I'm like, hey, Michael, like, you know, this guy wants to pay us using a credit card. And I'm like, how much is she supposed to pay? She's like, $30,000. I'm like, I'm not going to pay $1,000 to Stripe to process a transaction. This is crazy. Like, I'm like scratching my head for like, you know, a few minutes. And I'm like, ask him if he has stable coins. So she calls and I was like, do you mind paying us in stables? And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll pay you with stables. And we got this transaction immediately. We go open an account with Paxos. We offer and pay to our bank account. It's free. And I'm like, wow, this is actually amazing. You know, this is the future. And that, I think, for me, I would say, like, you know, as a business owner, was the epiphany of why this is so powerful and important. When you are a seed stage or, I don't know, maybe a Series A stage founder, if you have an opportunity to save $998, then you will take that opportunity.
For many small and mid-sized businesses, $1,000 in fees isn't trivial. In some cases, it can mean the difference between making payroll or not.
In moments like that, the appeal of digital payments becomes obvious. Faster settlement, lower cost, and no middle layers taking a share.
Stories like the one Michael and Fireblocks experience were just some of the many that began to illustrate the tangible benefits of digital currencies.
They showed how blockchain could extend existing payment systems rather than replace them, a complement to traditional finance.
By 2023, stablecoins and tokenized assets were entering treasury operations, cross-border settlements, and merchant payments.
Security and compliance remained central, but the conversation had shifted beyond whether digital assets could be trusted to how they could be integrated.
Fireblocks became one of the several providers enabling this transition, embedding trust into the rails of an increasingly digital economy.
The next challenge would take these ideas further, creating a secure global network for digital payments, linking banks, fintechs, and merchants directly.
At the turn of the decade, stablecoins had become a serious topic inside boardrooms across the payments industry.
Executives weighed in on what role digital currencies could play in the future of money. Were they a threat or a new foundation for global payments?
One of the boldest attempts to connect global money movement to digital infrastructure came from Facebook.
In 2019, the company announced Libra, a stablecoin project designed to let users send money as easily as sending a message.
It drew in some of the biggest names in finance and technology, including a former PayPal executive who at the time was one of the most senior people in Silicon Valley payments.
Friend of mine, he was the CEO of PayPal, and then he basically stepped down to go into Libra. And I had lunch with him, and I was like, are you nuts? Like, you're like at the top of the fintech payment infrastructure. Why would you go to something like this? You're like, you're the most senior person that I know in Silicon Valley. And he told me, listen, I'm like in the epicenter of international money movement. And you know what's strange is that if you're trying to browse to a website in Japan, you know, it loads within a second, you don't pay anything to anyone, and you're just basically moving a bunch of bytes from one server to another, right? But when you send money to Japan, it will take you 3 days, they will take $100 from you, it's super clunky, 1 out of 10 times it will get stuck, and this has to go away. So when he told me that, I was like, wow, this is like super interesting.
That conversation captured the frustration many in payments were feeling. The sense that global money movement lagged decades behind the internet itself.
It also revealed how stablecoins could bridge that gap.
So then I convinced Goldie, the CEO of that company, that Libra is where they should invest. So they fully doubled down on stablecoins, but specifically for the Libra project. And then the Libra project got shut down. And we were like, okay, they already built an infrastructure for stablecoins and they are knee deep into understanding all those flows. We acquired their company. And from there, it was, I would say, like, you know, a pretty incredible run, because what happened was that we were able to be fairly early. We were able to partner with both all the crypto native companies that are enabling stablecoins, companies like Bridge and MoonPay. Bridge is not part of Stripe, but basically MoonPay, Conduit, AlfredPay, all the different Transfer Swiss, and a lot of incredible companies that were really early in terms of building towards stablecoins, and also all the traditional financial institutions that were interested in stablecoins. We were their first partner, like Worldpay, Visa, and of course, like when Stripe acquired Bridge, Stripe as well. And I think we were fairly early to kind of understand the opportunities and also the friction points and the use cases that they were solving for.
The acquisition positioned Fireblocks to move quickly as stablecoin adoption accelerated.
By 2024, the company's network was being used by thousands of institutions, not only for digital asset custody, but increasingly for payments.
We are probably at the point where we have about 2,000 financial institutions using Fireblocks, and larger portion of it, maybe at that point about 10%, now 20% of those financial institutions are basically what you identify as payment companies, right? They don't go and trade Bitcoin or Ethereum or various strategies around crypto. The only thing that they actually care about is moving stablecoins for the sake of payments. And then what you're basically starting to see is that, yes, like the DNS, the Fireblocks network that we designed for crypto is useful for them, but actually what they're trying to do is something that is slightly different. They need on-ramps, they need off-ramps, they need the ability to do FX and swap either between stablecoin to stablecoin, or they need some kind of stablecoin to local currency on the other side. Compliance and specifically travel rule becomes non-negotiable.
That shift signaled how much the industry had evolved.
Digital asset infrastructure had matured beyond speculation and was now about efficiency, interoperability, and compliance.
Payment companies were building on blockchain, not to disrupt the system, but to make it faster and more connected.
But scaling those new rails exposed the familiar problem: fragmentation.
Each market had its own on- and off-ramp providers, its own licenses, APIs, and compliance rules.
Without standardization, cross-border payments remained complex and slow.
In crypto specifically, there is some confusion over there with travel rule, because it works well when you have two centralized parties, but it is completely broken when you're dealing with non-custodial wallets. But the second that you start dealing with on and off ramp, of course, you're dealing with centralized entities, because they need to have some money transmission licenses that allow them access to the fiat rails, right? So it becomes non-negotiable. And most of the activity, at least at this point in time, is around cross-border, right? Because that's the most inefficient part of the traditional financial system, that is just every time that I personally need to deal with in Spain, right? And what you basically see is kind of, let's call it like two specific problems. The first one is they need a set of partners globally that each one of them is doing on-ramps and off-ramps in different territories, or at least like, you know, on-ramps in different territories and across currencies, and they need specific licenses that those people will have. They don't know where to start, because you have some traditional payment service provider that is moving billions of dollars per day using Bank of America and JP Morgan, but now they're basically coming here. It's like, okay, who do I partner? Who's even a legitimate partner? And everybody pitching them, and they don't know like who's doing an off-ramp in the Philippines, right? So finding the partners is the first issue for them. And the second issue is that, okay, they found a partner, right? Let's say they found Bridge, right? And they integrated with Bridge. And then they need to go and they expand the business, and now they need another three partners. So each one of those partners, although they are doing very similar functionality, they have different APIs, right? Because there is no standard. It's all bespoke. And this guy's doing this kind of travel rule. Those guys are doing a different type of travel rule. It's all non-standard. No one from Swift came 50 years ago and basically standardized them into ISO 20, 2021, right? So we're basically starting to see that, and that actually slows down businesses, right? It slows down people to activate, to actually like get up and running. It slows them down from expanding the use cases. And we're like, okay, this is actually what we know how to do, right? We have the global network. We have all those parties. We know all of them. We like to connect between them. And we've been in the business of creating an authentication network and messaging network for connecting B2B players from 2018. So we're basically building, like we're analyzing exactly what's needed, and then we're basically launching the Firebox network for payments.
On September 4th, 2025, Firebox launched its network for payments, a neutral layer linking banks, payment processors, and stablecoin issuers through a single and secure API.
It unites local payment rails, blockchains, and stablecoin systems so institutions can move money instantly while keeping compliance embedded in every transaction.
Just as Swift did for traditional banking, networks like this are becoming the connective tissue of the digital asset economy, the rails that make the future of money actually work.
You now have a global directory that is available on our website. And in that global directory, you can select the geography. You get all the partners over there. It tells you which, what services do they provide. Do they do on-ramps, off-ramps, swaps, which currencies, what's their business model, et cetera, et cetera. What licenses do they carry? So you can find the partners. You can start the onboarding with those partners. And it's guaranteed that those partners with basically once you onboard with them and they provide you their API key or essentially their credentials, it automatically connects to your Firebox account. And from that point on, it's basically a standardized set of instructions across all of them that if you are an operation person, you can do that through the UI. If you are building an automated system, you have one API, two Firebox that is basically a hub that standardizes all those instructions across all the providers that you want. And from that point, you can basically build your favorite payment flow, payment use case, go and innovate. You're not locked to a specific stablecoin. It works across all the stablecoins. It works across over 100 geographies right now with 40 partners that we are launching with. We're going to add another 10 partners per month over the next couple of months to that. So clearly that is going to get expand. We're going to expand that. But the idea is really to unlock and secure and scale the ecosystem.
What began as cybersecurity infrastructure has become the plumbing of a new era. A live global network where transactions move instantly between regulated partners.
It is the modern counterpart to the messaging systems that once underpinned global banking. Only now, it is programmable and constantly expanding.
The next phase of finance is unfolding in real time. Institutions are already linking traditional systems and digital rails so money can move anywhere, instantly and securely.
In the next 12 months or 18 months, I'll be the most excited about the fact that I can just open my bank account and I can send money to my parents abroad, that live abroad. I can send them money at a click of a button, it arrives to their account immediately and not chase after both banks for 3 days to figure out where the money is. You know, that I would need to put like reminders on my calendar that I need to do it in the banking hours, but I will be able to actually do it when I finish working or when I wake up in the morning. And I think that that's kind of the friction that is really unsolved, and that on a personal level that can solve for all of us. I think that actually that reality is very, very close.
This has been FinTech Files from BCG Platinian.
This season, we're digging deep into the groundbreaking ideas that are reshaping the future of fintech. We got some amazing guests lined up. I wish I could tell you, but I guess you're just gonna have to wait and see. So make sure that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time on FinTech Files.